Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey everyone, this is BT and welcome to Inside the Episode. Today we've got a double for you. We are going inside episodes 140 and 141. It was a two-part series that David did entitled How to Create a Belief to Manifest Whatever You Desire in Your Life. Now that is a title worth listening to. How are you doing today, David?
Doing great. We got a doubler.
Yes, we do. We always like these. I love it when we do a series, even if they're, you know, only a couple in the series. It's great because it really is powerful on the listener's end because they can go back and listen to them in sequence. It's basically an hour plus shot of high quality stuff that has a common theme. So let's just dive right in. So I guess first and foremost, where did the inspiration for this two-part series come from?
Well, you know, one of the questions that I get all the time when I'm telling people that they can change their thoughts or that they can, basically they're automatic thoughts, they're reactive thoughts in life. They're always asking me, how do you stop that? How do you stop that? How do you stop that? And a lot of the answer is basically, well, first off, you have to understand that most of what you're saying and most of what you're thinking is habitual. So you have to break the habit of doing it, and you have to break the habit by putting something in there that is going to, that's basically a contradiction of what it is that you're saying. When they say that to me, when they say, how do you stop that thinking? What is so significant about that, Brandon, is that it's almost as if they're unaware that they have the power to choose, that they literally can choose to think something different in that moment. And I think it's like a temporary amnesia in some way. So I was thinking to myself, I want to explain this in a way that kind of fills in a few of the gaps there.
Sure.
So I've been working on, expanding it in different ways and filling in those gaps for people with the emphasis on how the worry, how the doubt and the fear, and how the truth actually plays a role in the way that we're actually thinking, along with whatever the subconscious mind is doing. So that's where it came from. It came out of the idea of trying to fix that problem for people.
Yeah, and it was great to be there as you were going through it, because I've seen pieces of the teaching throughout the years we've been together, but it seemed like this time around it was more simplified to the point where there's actual steps that people can take to start implementing right now to be able to, you know, basically change their belief system, right?
Yeah, I want them to be more aware of their ability to choose and then how to use that choice, like when we talked about doing it in a relaxed way and we talked about it implementing it by following the truth every day, right? So those are more practical, directive ideas that I think that they'll be able to use easier.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of times we just go to the default, and that default thinking, that default decision, that default choice is based on something that happened to us many, many years ago. We don't even put much thought into it. It just kind of happens. Boom, it's right there.
Exactly.
Perfect. Well, can you explain, going into the teaching in the first part, you talk about, I like it, the RCE. It's the results, the circumstances, and the environment. Can you explain a little more in depth about how those things relate to our ability to manifest what we want and desire?
Yeah, well, so the one thing that we need to understand is that we're inundated with that information from the results, circumstances, and our environment. We're primarily visual individuals. Our eyes, if you're not blind, that is, your eyes are your most dominant sense. And we go through our life letting the images that we see dictate how we think. So every minute your eyes are open, you're taking in the information of what you're seeing. And most of the time, we're seeing things that we've seen a billion times over. So it's a constant reinforcement. Our subconscious mind knows what to do with everything that we're seeing over and over again. So it's constantly being reinforced. When we do that, we're literally blocking out the things that are there, that are in our visual frame of reference, but we don't see them because we're blocking them out because we don't recognize them as something that would actually be of benefit to us. So without the brain going into complete overload because there's billions or trillions of bits of information in front of us that's coming to us visually and auditorily, our mind only focuses on what's important. Everything else it blocks out.
Right. It's kind of like blinders on a horse, you know,
when Absolutely, that's exactly what it's like.
You can't see either side because your brain wouldn't be able to handle it.
No.
It would be completely shut down if there was that.
Right.
Okay, that's great.
So we can only focus on one or two things, like really only focus on one thing. But we can be aware, you know, like I can be aware of the microphone and the camera and the iPad over here and your computer and all this at the same time. But I'm really focused on what you're saying. That's where my focus is.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of brings up to me how the concept of multitasking is a joke. Because we really don't multitask. Doing a task at one time, but you're able to focus. Like you're right, there's so much coming in at any one time, but you really focus on that one thing that's gaining your attention.
Well, the other thing about that's interesting is so like we have all these things here in the studio, right? But I'm not focused on any of them. I'm focused on you. But if there was a tiger coming at me over here, that would change my focus in a fucking hurry.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So if you think about this, if we're in a normal setting or what we perceive to be a normal setting, let's say a person's going to a seminar, pretty normal setting. There's nothing threatening about that for the average individual. But information starts coming at them that appears to be threatening based on their subconscious belief system. Their focus goes from the inspiration or the knowledge of what they're hearing into fear, shutdown, worry, I got to get the hell out of here. I can't do this. All they are is a salesperson. Like we start coming up with all these freaking crazy things to justify not taking in the information.
Right. The metaphorical tiger in your life.
Yeah.
I like that. Ooh, I got to remember that one. So let's talk about prior to the age of seven, because that comes up a lot, obviously, when we talk about the subconscious mind. So anything and everything goes in and we're unable to reject that, which means that each one of us is still dealing with patterns and thinking that took place for many of us decades ago, oftentimes without us even knowing that we're doing it. Again, the default. So broad stroke here, how do we take steps to better understand that line of thinking and changing the thoughts that no longer serve us, basically?
Well, the first thing is to become aware and understand what those thoughts are. So again, it's about awareness. If we're going through life with blinders on, if we're coming from a place of ignorance or denial, where we don't understand that the way that we're thinking is not serving us, then we can't get to the place of actually examining the way that we think and understanding why it's not serving us. So I think that there's a step in there, right? I had to realize for myself that something I was doing was causing the problems that I had in my life, but I didn't know what it was. And I didn't know that it was my thinking. I didn't know it was my thinking until I changed my thinking and got a positive result. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. The only thing that I changed was the way that I was thinking. How could this possibly happen? Yeah, there were things that I did that changed, but the thing that precipitated all of it was changing the way that I was thinking. So that gave me a clue. There's something going on there. Then I began to study that. And once I realized that, you know, it's very interesting because today it's almost laughed at. Like Think and Grow Rich is laughed at, right? Positive mindset is laughed at. The coaching industry has become pretty much a joke, on the street for most individuals. And, the secret became a huge joke also, you know. But all of it was based on this information that you could change the way that you think and that you could, by changing the way that you think, you change your life. Some people took that literally. Like you there's no way that you can change your life by changing your thoughts. Well, yeah, well, we're leaving out a ton of information. So between our thoughts and the life that we're experiencing, there is a whole process that's taking place that goes on, whether we're consciously aware of that or not. So the whole idea about changing your thoughts was also that when you change the way that you think, you change the way that you do, you know? I mean, when it's really changed, you actually change the way that you do things. You change the way that you feel about things. You change the way that you perceive things. You change the way that you assume things. You change all different kinds of stuff about yourself. But it starts with your thinking. So when there were naive people that believed you could just change your thinking and change your life, and they went out there and did that and then said it didn't work, they never took into consideration, or people intentionally left out or whatever. I don't know. There's all kinds of charlatan crap that goes on out there. That this actually also was very indicative of the idea that you had to change your behavior. There was a lot you had to change, not just your thoughts. I don't know that the people that originally started putting that information out there that way, like Napoleon Hill, ever thought that people would not understand that when you change your thinking, that spills over into your behavior and all these other different things. But unfortunately, it did. So the idea is that we have to understand that the way that we think, constructively think, or at least we think it's constructive, is actually causing a problem in our life. We have to understand how we're doing it, and then we can look at how do we actually change it so that we get the result that we're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I like that too. And I, you know, what came up to my mind when you were talking about that was, you know, the thoughts become things idea. We do miss a very large step. Like the people that dove into The Secret thought you could just sit there and think about something and it would automatically show up. They're missing a large piece of work that has to be done to get there. And when you do change your thoughts, you are in essence changing who you are as a person. And that spills over to this piece, right, then to this piece, and then to this piece. Right. And then maybe 25 pieces down the road, you get that thing.
Yep.
I think a lot of people thought it was going to happen in an instant, and it can, but there are some things that have to take place. And a lot of it, I always tell people when I'm having this conversation, it's about committed action. Like, you can't just think about it. You got to take action towards that thing. And it may not always be easy to take that action. Sometimes it's damn hard, but you still have to do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And when you don't, you reinforce the old pattern. You don't, it's not that it stays stagnant. You reinforce the old pattern. So that's why it's so important. That's why I did that brief little mention of about trusting ourselves.
Yes.
Because if we don't change our thinking, if we don't do the thing, if we're not committed, we then lose trust in ourselves and we lose confidence in our ability that we can do anything. So we literally become kind of impotent in our own life, so to speak. We're not effective anywhere because we just don't trust that we're actually going to do a damn thing because we've lied to ourselves so many times. So that has to be changed also. And then, yeah, so you commit to doing it or you commit to not doing it. There's no in between.
Right, right. It makes me question, you know, how many thoughts are my own? You know what I mean? Like, how many of these thoughts that, because I've always been, or as of late, I've been recently learning about, don't always take the first answer that comes to mind. Like, dig a little deep, do some self-inquiry. I'm thinking that my default answer or decision or whatever it may be is not my own typically. I wonder how many thoughts in my head are my own.
Millions.
Of my own. Yeah, okay.
Millions are not your own.
Yeah.
I was horrified when I got that by my mentor. When Proctor said to me that I wasn't actually thinking, but I was repeating the thoughts of other people. I could see that for the first time, and it was scary. It was actually scary because I was like, whoa, then who the fuck am I actually, right? But see, it's only until you're startled by that you can actually go in and then start to think about who you are.
Which is the awareness.
Yeah, because you got to start to separate all of the programmed thoughts and behaviors from other people, and then what is originally mine? Right.
Yes.
And, you know, it takes a long time to start to get to the originality of coming from a place of who you really are, what you would choose. You start to question everything. And hopefully people do it in a good, constructive way. Like, do I really like this, or am I doing this because that's what my family always did? Do we always eat this on Christmas because I like to eat that on Christmas, or is it because it was somebody else's tradition that I just accepted? We have so many beliefs like that. It's crazy. And we never get to learn who we really are and decide for ourselves what we want.
Yeah. Oh, man, I love that. This is crazy. This is like this is the third part of the episode. I swear I'm getting new things from this all as we have this conversation. So, okay, let's transition now to worry, fear, and doubt, which is probably one of my favorite teaching moments that you share at your live events. You know, I call it the Pac-Man, since the graphic you use around the triangle and the power of suggestion very much reminds me of my 80s upbringing. Those of you who have attended an event out there know exactly what I'm talking about right now. Can you give us some more details on how to work through that worry, fear, and doubt and stay on track? Because for so many, it's just debilitating.
You literally cannot allow it to take up space in your mind, meaning that the moment that you see your mind has gone to that place, you have to switch it over to the truth. That was the whole reason why I was saying we have to understand the truth and let the truth guide us. So it's a pre-decision. It's pre-thought out. You think to yourself, here's the way that I typically show up with negative thinking. Here's what my worry thoughts are. Here's what my doubt thoughts are. I know that those are going to pop up as I start to move forward. What's the truth? And then you be real clear and identifiable on what the truth is. The second that you see doubt, worry, or fear show up in your mind, you switch it just like that in your mind. You literally jump up, change your whole body, and get into like, I'm a success. The money that I want's coming to me. Clients are coming to me. I'm servicing people all the time. Whatever it is that you need to affirm over and over again, the second your mind goes into worry, doubt, or fear, you jump up and start doing that. And then you literally train yourself to respond differently or react differently to the stimulus that caused you to go into the doubt, worry, and fear. You cannot let doubt take up 1 millimeter of space in your mind, ever. As soon as you get in and you're like, you got to shoot it, you got to pull out a gun and just blow it away. You cannot tolerate it at all.
Right, because if you leave that door open, it blows right through.
It's like cancer. It spreads like wildfire right throughout your whole mind, and then it takes over your perception. That changes your actions, and before you know it, you completely stop doing anything that you're doing. And I mentioned in there that most people stop at the start. So they first get the information, and that doubt, worry, and fear shows up so fast that I've told people before, you'll literally change back into not doing what you said you were going to do before you leave the seminar room if you don't make a new decision and take a new action. If you walk out of here without doing something different, you've already gone back. You're not even in your hotel room yet or back in your car. You've gone back.
Yeah.
It happens 100%. That fast.
Oh, totally. Well, and to use an example of my own life, I know that way back when Steph was first starting on this journey and was looking to hire you as her coach, you know, she made the decision and all hell broke loose. Like, if ever there was a time when worry, fear, and doubt was going to knock her down, when you said, you know, you basically stop at the start, we very easily could have done that. Like, crazy shit happened. Dish, you know, laundry broke, like the washing machine broke, the cats ran away, my kids got head lice. Like, this was a real thing.
Yeah.
And it happens over and over and over again. And we very easily could have stopped at the start, but she pressed through that. And because of that allows me to sit here today. Like, I'm here today because we made a decision that we were not going to let, you know, the WFD knock us down. But for so many other people, you know, they curl up into a ball and cover themselves, bury their heads in the sand and just hope that it's going to go away, and it doesn't.
Right.
Like, this is a part of the process and it scares the shit out of people. But the other side of that is so extremely powerful and I absolutely love it.
It's fantastic.
It is. It's great. And actually, I congratulate people that go through that are new to our coaching program or new to our programs that we're in, that they'll send me an email or they'll say to me, oh my gosh, this horrible thing happened. I'm like, hey, congrats, because it means you're that much closer to that huge breakthrough you want.
Yeah. You know, and the interesting thing about you is that you had to have also wanted this all along, or you wouldn't have attracted Steph into your life.
Very true.
Right? Steph for you is no different than Proctor was for me. It gave me somebody else to believe in while I was going through my change. I did that for Steph. Steph did that for you.
Yeah.
And so, but you had to have wanted it all along, even when you were resistant to it, which is like, when you think back, you think to yourself, that's weird, but there has to be some truth to that. Otherwise, you'd have left. You'd have been like, I'm out of here. I'm not doing it.
It's so true. I give myself so little credit. It's so funny that you caught me. Thanks for calling me on that, because I give myself so little credit for that, because I always look at Steph as the risk taker and me as the risk averse individual. But I wouldn't have attracted Steph had I not been able to handle it or actually grown in it. And I've grown, you know, leaps and bounds.
You have.
I'm still not quite there, but are we ever really there?
You are there.
Yeah.
I you're exactly okay. Where you need to be. You're completely there. And here's another thing that's really fascinating. I mean, think about this for a moment. So we've already established that you had to have wanted to do that, right? If you didn't want to do that, you would have left the relationship. You say you're risk averse. I would challenge you on that and say, no, that's not true, because you took a huge risk in staying with her. You took a huge risk in leaving your job as a teacher. You took a huge risk stepping into being an entrepreneur with Edible Arrangements. You took a huge risk to move over and come to work with me. You take risks every day in all the new things that you learn. You're not risk averse. You just need something that resembles certainty in your life so that you're able to move into the risk management easier. But you take as much risk as anybody else.
Damn, good for me. Yes,
yeah, good for you.
I love this. This is so good. I'm having a healing right here in the room. This is so good. Oh my God. Yes, thank you for that. All right. So in the second episode, you talked about programming the subconscious mind, and that involves constant space repetition. For those of that have never heard that before, can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so there's two ways that the mind is programmed. Constant spaced repetition. So it's hearing and experiencing and doing the same thing over and over again. And through that repetition, that message is constantly turned over to the subconscious mind. That is more easily done in the formative years of our life. Like, it's easier to learn a language. It's easier to learn to play an instrument. That's why it's so easy for students to learn so much information in a short period of time. We learn to walk. We learn to talk. We learn to communicate. We learn math. We learn to read by the age of seven. Like, we learn all of these different things in a period of time where our mind is not resisting it, right? Once we start to develop the beliefs about resistance, then the constant spaced repetition becomes more difficult because now choice is involved. You think about this: when we learn things when we were a kid, we didn't have a choice.
Right.
There was no choice. And we also had our internal DNA, our genetics, just being a human being causes us to learn certain things by default. We have a desire to walk. We have a desire to talk. We have a desire to reach out and touch and explore things as children. That's inherent in every human being. So you have that. There's no resistance around that either. If anything, there's extraordinary persistence. No child ever doubts that they're going to walk.
Right.
Right? I mean, most people probably don't even remember learning how to walk.
No.
It was just a constant desire to learn how to do so. The same thing with talking. So if you think back in your childhood, when can you remember the first time you started resisting learning something? It probably came in around seven,
yeah.
Somewhere around that age is when you would be resistant to actually learning something. So once we move past that age, now we have to engage our power to choose in order to accept something to be able to learn it. But then you have the other way that we're programmed, which is a sudden emotional impact. That shuts off the inductive reasoning factor of the conscious mind, and it becomes totally deductive in the moment. So there's things that do that. It could be, in a negative side, it could be like an accident.
We have
a car accident, a trauma, yeah. Falling off a horse. You know, the thing is like,
sure.
Get back on right away before it has a chance to take root
right.
In your mind. But you also have something called fascination. When we get fascinated with something, we shut off the inductive reasoning ability in our mind, and we go deductive. So advertisers and marketers have known this forever. That if we can fascinate someone, that the message to buy will go in their mind and they will start buying before they actually think about what it is that they're doing. It becomes impulsive in a way. Now, that would be a negative way. We can also use that in a positive way. We can become completely fascinated by the life that we want to create and allow our minds to use that fascination to focus on our imagination, which is the internal creation of an external event, which happens before we create anything. And then as we focus on that, what does it do? It fuels our desire, right? And you and I have had so many conversations about desire
right.
And about the guy, the runner, what was his name?
Oh, again? Prefontaine.
Prefontaine,
yeah,
the runner
Steve
in Newman. The early 70s,
yeah.
And the development of Nike shoes and all of that. Like, he lost his desire because he came in fourth in the 72 Olympics and he had to find it again. We find it by focusing our imagination on what it is that we want and getting re-excited and reignited about that. We build that desire back up to a white hot heat, as Napoleon Hill said, and then we take action on it. We start recreating in our life.
Yeah, everybody loves a redemption story, don't they?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, so as we wind down this two-part series, any final thoughts you want to leave us with on this how to create a belief to manifest whatever you desire in life?
It's very simple in as far as what I would leave people with. Watch these two podcasts as many times as you need to until you start doing it. Like, let it really sink into your mind. Watch it over and over and over and over and over again. That's the first way that I started learning how to do this. I had to take this information in and do it 1,000 times so that I could start to really understand what was going on, instead of just having it be this intellectual understanding, like, I heard it or I read that book, I don't need to read it again. This is something that becomes a lifelong study. I've been studying it for 27 years. So when you study something for that long and you consistently move forward, you think about it differently as you go through your life. So take these two podcasts, study it, share it with as many people as you can that want to change. It'll totally change their lives if they take the information and do something with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when I was first starting out again, learning from you, and it's one thing to learn it in a room that you're teaching it. It's another thing to be out in the world, and you have to be listening to it over and over and over again. And you mentioned earlier on when we were talking in this inside about, you know, how some people, even the second they leave the room, they're automatically going back to their old default.
Right.
And for me, what helped me was a visual in my mind was it's sort of like a rubber band. Like, it's very elastic. Like, the brain is very elastic, but I've got to find a way to hold its space. So I take out a big giant can of soup and I put that rubber band around it, and it doesn't come back to its former self. That is what I have used as a visual to allow myself to allow more information, my environment, study to continue to come in to this day. And if you're not studying something, these episodes are a great place to start, but you should be studying something, whether it's reading a book, whether it's watching a podcast, whether it's listening, you know, going on YouTube. You need to stay in that environment of it. And then the manifestation piece is a beautiful, beautiful byproduct.
Yeah,
from that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love this. This was so much fun. These two episodes are something to go back to over and over and over again. David, I have a feeling that there's so many more of these that are yet to come.
Oh, absolutely. There's no end. We're just going to keep doing it.
There's no end. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming inside with me. This has been great.
My pleasure. Thanks, T.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.